Welcome, my babies. My name is Patch Drury, and I am the host of this podcast, God, the podcast, not to be confused with God, the all-loving, transcendent source energy that pervades us all, but a podcast about God, kind of. Anyway, I am recording this from my sacred space, from my church, from my temple, from my sepulcher. I am in a wooded vale in an opening, and I have a stone altar in front of me, and all my recording material equipment is sitting on that altar, and I am prepared to make a auditory, audible sacrifice to the gods of podcasting, specifically the god of podcasting known as Breadbox Media. We are really excited to be a part of the Breadbox Media family. They are awesome. There's a lot of other content and material that relates to in some degree to what I'm doing. I'm sure they probably would, in some way, some of the podcast hosts would prefer not to be associated with me, but that's okay. I love them anyway. But excuse me, I don't have one of those burp cough buttons, and I ate a bunch of food before I got on the mic, and I shouldn't have done that. But our podcast, God the Podcast, is all about transcendence and paths to transcendence and visions and unique ideas about God and ways to find your bliss and what it looks like when you do find your bliss and how that affects and changes your life. And if you would like to support that, if you would like to support Breadbox Media in general, we would encourage you to find one of the support buttons on the Breadbox site and hit it and donate a little money. Because this content is free. It is free like your soul was meant to be free. It is free like the birds flying above your head are free. It is free like the kiss of God on a sunny morning as you sit on your back porch listening to the sparrows and watching the sunrise up is free. That's how free this podcast network is. But it would be really helpful to us to get some money. So hit that donate button if you like what we're doing. Man, I really got to get a cough button or something. I apologize. This is our inaugural episode on the Breadbox Media Network. And so it is an episode that will kind of explain a little bit about me and who I am and why I'm doing this. And ultimately, what is the point of this podcast? And rather than tell you what the point is, before we get into the meat of the episode, I'm just going to let the episode speak for itself. So this episode is kind of an interview with me by a friend of mine named Troy Price, who is also a podcaster. He has a podcast called the Berea Podcast. It's not on the Breadbox Network, but it's really good. It's about what it's like to live in Berea, Kentucky, and if you live there, what you can look for to make your day better, what kind of goods and services are available, what kind of unique and colorful characters you might meet if you're walking the streets of Berea. So go listen to that. And then, but before you do that, listen to this. It's Troy, who I've known since high school, known since church camp, talking to me about why I'm doing this and how my relationship with God, how my vision of God has changed in over the course of 44 years. And it's I think it's a meaningful journey. Hopefully you do too. Hopefully it resonates with you. I will just say, if you're someone who has absolutely no questions about God and who he is and what he's about, then don't listen to this. This isn't for you. This is a podcast for people who have questions and have maybe been warned off of those questions by people in higher up statuses, I was going to say. That's not the right word. But anyway, people who may be higher on a hierarchical food chain than you are might have said, hey, quit asking questions, boy. Just take this. Just swallow it. Just eat it. Take it down. Take it. And if that has happened to you, then this podcast is made for you. I'm pretty fond of questions, and I'm pretty I really don't like people who tell you not to ask questions. And I've kind of made it part of my life's mission to kick against those particular pricks. So yeah, those guys are pricks. Anyway, this is God the Podcast. Thank you for being here. More to come. So I am sitting here with Troy Price, and Troy is a fellow podcaster. What's the name of your podcast, Troy?
We're currently doing a podcast, my wife and I, of the Berea podcast. We've moved recently to Berea, Kentucky, and we love it, and we just want to share episodes on specific things that we love about the town.
What's awesome about Berea.
Exactly.
And you recently got a like from the star of The Powers of Matthew Starr, which a lot of people may not recognize the name of that show, but when we were kids, that was a Friday night television show, kind of in the same vein of Knight Rider or The Master, which was a ninja show.
Correct.
So he liked the episode?
Right. Not the star, and I didn't post star.
I'm sorry.
A character.
Was it Lou Gossett Jr.?
No, but that would be awesome. His IMDb said waiter number two. And Power of Matthew Starr.
So he wasn't a recurring character. He had just been on the show.
Yes.
And is he a Berea?
No, he is. He's still like, he owns a theater and does that kind of stuff.
How did he find the episode?
There are lots of resources online for podcasters about podcasting.
Okay.
This particular one was a group that was for geocentric podcast. So it's podcasts about specific places rather than topical issues.
So I assume when you saw his name, you weren't immediately like, oh, this guy was on The Power of Matthew Starr. You did a little research and discovered he had been on The Power of Matthew Starr.
Okay, so I recognized his picture from his little like on Facebook. So I said, how do I know this guy? And it went back to, and I probably didn't remember him from Waiter Number Two, but he is like a professional
headshot. He's been
headshot.
Stuff.
Right. Okay. So that's a familiar face. So that's pretty cool.
Well, I feel like we have sidetracked from my original introduction pretty strongly, but that was worth it, I think. So, Troy, I've known Troy for, he's one of my oldest friends at this point, more than 25 years.
Longest, not oldest.
Longest, yeah. We've been friends for a very long time. And my first introduction to Troy was through church camp. So we have our past is steeped in religion and stuff like that. And so Troy and I keep in contact, and he was talking to me about my podcast the other day, and he said, you really need to do an episode where you kind of explain why you're doing this and kind of what the point behind it all is. And I thought that was really good advice, and I sat down to try and record it myself, and I thought, this just feels weird and awkward and forced, and maybe I'll get to the point where I could do an episode just by myself eventually. But for now, it didn't feel good. So I invited Troy to come, and we would have this sort of like an organic conversation around why I'm doing this as opposed to me just blabbering on in a mic. There'd be two of us blabbering on.
Sure, not a problem. I can blabber, man. Definitely. But Pat, I wanted to ask. Patch?
Patch, please.
Please.
A lot of people from my past called me Pat. Not a lot, but you. But regularly I would go by Patrick, but then I've kind of grown into this nickname Patch. I think it makes me sound gruff but lovable.
Yeah, so that's
like
so
a
that's
longshoreman.
Okay.
Or a soldier of fortune.
A folder of fortune.
Yeah.
But
anyway,
yes, absolutely. So, my question is, let's go back to you 16, me 17. Okay.
Right.
We had a different worldview than we do now. Can you quickly summarize just that worldview and what was going on and what was the appeal of that to you then?
Yeah.
You're a 40-some-year-old man right now. Put yourself in, you know, the 16-year-old mindset.
Right. So I would describe our worldview as so conservative Christian. I almost said fundamental, and I think there is something fundamentalist about the viewpoint we came from, but fundamentalism is one of those words that has a lot of baggage to it that I think doesn't apply to the people we grew up around and who we were raised by and how we were raised and what we believe.
Hey, let me interject on that. Let's separate the people from the theology.
Okay.
You know, talk to me about the theology
and what that did.
Because I think the people cared about us because
Absolutely.
We were 16 and 17-year-old kids, you know, committed to what they
Absolutely.
Agreed that was important.
Agreed. So it was a version of Christianity that I would say was about probably 75% literalist. So we wouldn't, you know, when the Bible said, we weren't extreme literalists where the Bible says Satan is a lion. We weren't like, well, Satan is a lion. Satan is an animal.
Correct.
But as far as viewpoints of Jesus as the Son of God, what happens to us when we die, the historical reliability of the Bible. Those were things that I think we were pretty well bought into.
Inerrant.
Yes, inerrant. Inerrant would be a great word. And so I would say that there, you know, we talked a lot about loving people, and I think that was important, but I don't think there was quite the progressive social justice bent to Christianity then that you can find now in some places. And so,
well, you can't separate the social justice from the missionary. You know, they believe what we do, and it's our job to teach them and instruct them. And out of that brings the social justice is connected.
Yeah, I think maybe the point I made, social justice took a backseat to proselytizing, I think.
Yes.
I think proselytizing was always more important than social justice would have been.
Correct.
Is that, would you
and do a quick summary of social justice, what you mean by
what
that?
What I mean by social justice is looking out for the needy and the poor and looking at the way how the world in general is unfair and imbalanced, and feeling like as a Christian, it's my duty, because Jesus taught us to do that, to try and fix some of that by reaching out to people who don't have as much, by visiting the prisoner, by giving your coat and your food and your water to people who need it.
Absolutely. I agree with that as well, that part of the kingdom of heaven was taking care of the widows and the orphans. But the Great Commission is, go ye therefore to all the world.
Right.
So that was our push of you know, be a missionary. That digresses from, we're digressing again. What did it give you at the time, though?
It gave me a sense of history. It gave me a language to speak when it came to religion. Today I'll speak about God and transcendence and things like that. And while transcendence wasn't a word that was used a lot, it gave me a basic framework. Like, God is something that is above your objective reality. Now, I may not necessarily agree with what I thought that was back then, but it gave me a sense that there is something more important than your objective reality.
Well, that revelation took the form of Jesus Christ,
yeah.
And that's God relating to us.
Right.
And everything that was spoken about him is what's special.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So that I think that was the biggest thing, was an interest and a... we'll just stop an interest
sure.
in the fact that there is something beyond this objective reality.
Good deal. So I put the 16-year-old because that's really when it was,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Let's rocket ahead years, okay? There had to be a point where you said unequivocally, I don't believe that anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a specific memory of that? And if so, be as specific, summarizing, I was here, this is what did it.
Yeah, so it's been one of those things where the tide has been growing for some time. And one of the things I left out of your introduction, and I hope you'll take this, you may not take it, but one of the people from my past that I first saw for the first time being willing to kind of ask those hard questions was you. And so you were very inspirational to me in that sense.
Of losing your faith. Awesome.
You really led me away. I like to call you the millstone around my neck.
Awesome.
No, absolutely. I know when it was, Sarah was pregnant. And so I started having these thoughts in my head about, what am I going to teach my son about God? Who am I going to show Jack Henry that God is?
And what age were you at that time?
I was 40.
Okay.
And so that really became hard for me, because there were a lot of things, not just the Old Testament, but the old, because I think it's easy for people to point at the Old Testament and say, well, this is barbaric and bloodthirsty, and I would say progressive Christianity would say, well, yeah, it is, but look at this, look at Jesus, this is all different.
Sure.
And I would say there are things in both parts that were problematic to me, and I wasn't sure what I was going to teach Jack Henry. And I would lay awake in bed at night thinking these big thoughts about who is God and what is his purpose and is he really just and good. And I thought about this stuff, and it would keep me up at nights, and eventually it expressed itself in a rash. So
You were as stressed out.
Yeah,
I was
stressed that I got physical hives. I started itching a lot, and Sarah was finally like, what is going on? And she made me go to a therapist.
Okay.
And so I went to a therapist here in town. His name is Dr. Jett. I'm sure he won't mind me saying that. Not that he'll ever know. But he was very... he was very sympathetic to what I was going through, and he kind of taught me this idea that the way you become an adult
is that you hold the stuff that authority has given you, whether that's your parents or the church or the government or whoever is above you, like what they have given you. You hold it in your hand and you look at it and you say, do I believe this or not? And if you believe it, you put in the keep pile. And if you don't believe it, you put in the throwaway pile. And I had never really gone through that process. I grew up in a very conservative, Christian-loving home, but I was surrounded by even the non-conservative ones still would have worn their nice clothes on Sunday. They still would have never spoken out against Jesus or questioned any of that. And so I went from
an affirmation of that worldview.
Exactly.
At 16.
So I was surrounded by affirmation and nobody questioning. I went to Bible college. Nobody questioned. I went to my first job, which is at a church. Went horribly off the rails, but I still didn't really question.
Sure.
And so I kind of made it into my 30s and 40s without ever going through that process of judging what I had been taught. And so in that sense, I was a really late bloomer. And so I've had people kind of like look
at me. Is that the first time you've heard that you were a late bloomer?
It was the first time I'd it came up in health class.
Okay,
I think.
Good.
But,
okay.
But it was, you know, some people have kind of said to me, like, who don't get the big deal about what I'm going through, is they're like, well, yeah, I went through that in my 20s. And I'm like, well, congratulations, you should have.
Sure.
You were normal.
Right.
I didn't go through that. I didn't go through it till my 40s. And so at your 40s, I would say it's significantly more earth-shattering in a lot of ways.
Right.
Because
well, just brain development, that's supposed to happen at your 20s.
Yeah. My brain is not elastic anymore. And for your family and friends to have watched you be the one thing for 40 years, and then all of a sudden you say, you know what? I don't think I'm this thing anymore.
Right.
Is really, it causes stress for people. And so I'm aware of the stress that it has caused. It has removed a lot of stress from my life. I don't worry about a lot of the things I worry about before. I don't, things don't feel as bleak as they used to me, which is strange, I think,
sure,
for a lot of people to hear. But that's been the case for me. So does that answer the question, Liz?
So let me repeat it back, and then we can make sure it is. So that through, you know, selecting what you were going to tell your son about this worldview, we're talking about worldviews, that what you had been part of from 16 on, you didn't want to pass that.
I didn't
part
feel like
on.
That was something I wanted to give.
Gotcha.
Him.
And so that didn't ring true. That well, this must not be true.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that and when I you know I'm always wincing when I'm trying to hear this through the ears of my parents. Mm-hmm. And so when I say that didn't feel like something I wanted to pass on, that makes me wince. I'm like, oh, I'm rejecting that.
Right.
But what I tell myself is I have a responsibility to look at the world and say, does the world line up with various belief systems.
Right.
And I just do not think the world lines up with the belief system that was handed to me as a Christian.
Gotcha.
And so I just feel like if I'm going to equip Jack Henry to be the best person he can be and for life to go the best that it can, I can't give him something that doesn't feel true to me.
Sure.
So there's a lot of anxiety that goes with that, but that's where I'm at.
No, exactly. And so my background is in child and family studies. So you're trying to equip Jack Henry for the world as you know it.
Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, that led to these questions. And so now, you know, you're trying to really find the true world.
Yeah.
You know, and even that behind the scenes. Let's go back to your thoughts and then of the 16-year-old and break down a little bit of it, of just simply the questioning. What were the questions? I don't want to get to the ultimate question, the answers to those questions yet. But what we said is that literality, liturgical, the actual, the Bible itself is an supreme source of knowledge.
Yeah. So as a 40-year-old, what did I get hung up on?
Right. Why did you not buy that?
You know, there's a lot of things that I got hung up on, but the biggest one was really, and I hate to, let me just say, I'm not an atheist in any way. I do believe in a transcendent, non-objective reality of some kind.
Okay.
But studying atheist and atheism was really helpful to me in kind of like helping figure out what I think. And as Christopher Hitchens used to describe the Christian kind of morality framework worldview.
He would say sickness.
Sickness, he would say, yeah, and which I don't agree with that necessarily. Mm-hmm. But he would say, Christianity says, you were born sick, now go find the cure. So every description of God as loving, as a warm, gentle creator who's concerned about me kind of falls apart on the petard of I didn't get to opt in. You know,
just your place of birth.
Yeah, it's like you were born,
right?
And I think even the most progressive forms of Christianity would say you were born damaged. There was a fall that you had nothing to do with, and so because of that, if you do nothing, if you go your whole life and do nothing, you are responsible for the way you were born.
Right.
Like that's enough to condemn you.
Exactly, and the piece of Jesus coming as a sacrifice is because of the original sin born into you.
And
that's the yin and yang. Quote, I mean, we're going crazy. But that's the crux. You have that original sin, the sacrifice happened so that you could have the true relationship with God.
And so I have to do something about that according to Christianity. It is not an option to say, I'm not playing this game, I'm opting out, I'll be on the side, you tell me when it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not an option to me. And there is no real definition of love, especially love paired with omnipotence and all-powerfulness, that makes that feel like that works there to me.
Right.
And so for a while, I studied, like, well, maybe God is not omnipotent. Maybe he's not all powerful.
Right.
And so, there are Jewish belief structures that kind of explore that. And one of them's called process thought. And maybe God is just like us and he's trying to push back and fight back evil just as hard as we can. And that was a Jewish rabbi came up with this. Well, a couple of Jewish rabbis came up with it.
Well, guy who's use his name because he may not hear it.
I cannot think of his name right now.
Okay.
But he really kind of started promoting it again because his son had like devastating autism. And he was just like, why would God do this? And he finally came to the point that God couldn't help it. That in the Bible, when it says God looked down and the earth was covered with chaos, that was evil. And so God did his best to push that aside and say, let's start anyway and try to hold back the chaos.
Right.
And so life from that point on is us working with God, trying to hold back chaos. That ultimately didn't feel right to me. It didn't click the way I wanted it to.
Right.
So that wasn't, I didn't become Jewish at that point. I can't get to all loving, and I can't get to all loving as it combines with all powerful. I just think it doesn't work.
Right. Well, in the book, Good Things Happen to Bad People. Why do good things happen to bad people? Is it Norman Vincent Peale? Is that a name that rings a bell?
Yeah.
You know, he says God is either, you know, omnipotent, omniscient, or loving. You can only get two.
Yeah.
And yes, you know, so we're not just saying this in your studio, saying these, listen how brilliant we are.
This is a widely held opinion.
Right, right.
But it's also a wide...
Contradictory. It begins with an H, heresy.
Yeah.
To
it's a widely fought
faith.
Against opinion by Christian apologists.
Yes.
And if you get on YouTube and Google God, all good, all powerful, you'll find, I would assume that'll bring it up, but you can find dozens and dozens of videos of apologists saying, here's why this argument doesn't work. But I have watched a lot of those, and I have yet to see one that convinced me like, oh, yeah, I think I had this wrong.
Right.
But I am open to that. I pray a lot to whatever God is and say, if I'm wrong, if I'm being really just like disrespectful and in love with my own reasoning process, which I am to some degree, I admit.
All humans are.
Yeah, but I ask God to show me, like reveal it to me. And for whatever reason, either I'm right or he's not inclined to show me. He, she, it.
Sure. And actually, that's tough coming from the evangelical, the he's of, you know,
absolutely.
In the Bible. You know, I do try to refer to God, unfortunately, difficult linguistically, but in God every time I'm talking about God rather than God and he and God or she, even just that God isn't.
It's ingrained.
My
guess is even the most dyed-in-the-wool conservative fundamentalist Christian doesn't believe God actually has a penis or his chromosome matches up to male chromosomes.
Right.
But there's this patriarchal power that is tied into calling him a he.
Right.
And to call him a she or even an it. I think she is probably more offensive than it. just because of the patriarchal structure, sure, but I don't know.
Well, like El Shaddai is supposed to be feminine compared to the mountains, and Elohim masculine.
But we don't have to face that because we don't really speak the language. So
right. Absolutely. So here we are now, sitting here. Do you have like a definitive, this is what I think now about God? Or what is the meaning
kind
of life?
Kind of.
What is tangibly right now?
So Joseph Campbell is kind of my guy. Like, okay. I talk about Joseph Campbell a lot.
He may not hear this.
Or he may, since he's in the afterlife. But, you know, Joseph Campbell was a comparative religion professor, and he really talked about religion. One of the metaphors he used that it really meant a lot to me was that religion is a frame. And you can spend your time looking at the frame and miss the picture. Like, the frames are really intricate and, you know, beautiful and put together, but they are not the point. And so a frame is a way of showing you a picture. A frame says, look here. And so that's what religion is supposed to say. Religion is supposed to say, here's God, look here. Don't look at us, look here.
Gotcha.
And so that kind of, that's what really hooked me into Joseph Campbell. And then studying his monomyth as a way to understand story. But I feel like, and Joseph Campbell was really big in Carl Jung. And so Carl Jung, as a psychologist, they both kind of talked about the same things about religion, that religion and God and angels and demons and all of this stuff, Christianity, religion assumes those things exist outside of us. Whereas Carl Jung and Joseph Campbell would say those things exist inside of us. And religious stories and mythology are to exist to teach us about ourselves and to encourage us to go deeper. And there are some people who are a little further down the wackadoo path that I'm not completely unconvinced by, who would say when people claim to have experiences with angels and demons, that is their perception putting a picture on something that's inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that to me makes a lot of sense about religion, is that it's a way to teach us, instead of going outside, to go deeper and deeper inside and figure ourselves out. And I thought a lot about this. I've been writing a blog post about it ever since Matt Bevin's thing about the way we combat violence in Louisville is by having prayer walks.
Right.
And I'm thinking about that. And I think prayer is really useful, prayer and meditation, for changing ourselves, for changing ourselves internally. I think it's pretty useless to change other people and to change the outside world. So that's kind of where I'm at with religion. So I don't think
so. It is an inner practice.
It is an inner practice that has inner results.
Okay.
And that's religion. Religion is to teach us about ourselves.
So are there any behaviors other than the, you know, the prayer for inner rightness?
Yeah.
That you're called to do?
Meditation. I've tried. I suck at it. I think everybody sucks at meditation probably. No. But just trying to get still and really, to me, the way I've understood meditation is learning how to notice your inner life. And okay. So what are the thoughts that come to me and what are they representative of? And can I just be there with that thought, watch it pass by and mm-hmm. see what's next? And so gratefulness. I really am big on gratitude. We try to sit down every night at the dinner table. This is a fairly new thing. For a while we were watching New Girl on Netflix at dinner time, and that was not a good...
As a spiritual practice?
Yeah, that was our spiritual practice. It didn't go well. So we sit down dinner and we talk about, well, what is everybody thankful for today? And just nobody's quite sure who we're directing that at.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe at nobody, but just...
But just kinda, the practice
but
of
But just
it.
To say, man, my life is really good. And these little moments, as Kurt Vonnegut talked about his dad or his granddad or his uncle was tried to teach him, when you notice something is good, just take a second and say, well, isn't this nice? And right. So trying to teach, especially Jack Henry, like when you've had a really good day, just stop and say, man, that was a good day. And then you start to notice, man, I have a lot more good days than I have bad days.
Sure.
And like the stuff that the world tries to tell me is bad or that I think is bad really is a pretty small part of life. And because I think perception has a lot to do with reality. And
okay.
So if you start telling yourself, man, life is pretty good, chances are your life's going to get pretty good.
Sure.
To some degree, if you start saying, I'm really successful at this, the chances of you being really successful at this get a lot better.
Sure.
Because you start creating tracks for yourself to run in, if
All
that
right.
makes sense.
All right. Well, I'm hearing that your responsibility is for the inner life, yeah, and that's the role of, you know, religion and spirituality with you right now. I want to pivot for a second. If that is the goal, how come you're doing a podcast about God for the whole world to see?
Because I used to work at a church. Okay. I've got about 10 years as a pastor behind me.
Sure.
And as I was going through some of these doubts, I was still working at one of the churches. And I was really honest with the staff about, I'm really struggling with some doubts. And some people were good about that. Some people, in hindsight, I would be like, oh, you didn't handle that great. But one of the guys that I really respect came to me and he said, hey, I know you're going through some doubts. I want to say to you, be really careful what questions you ask and be really careful what other voices you listen to. And I can think now, at this point, I can think of nothing less helpful and destructive to what I was going through than to say, be careful. Mm. I don't think questioning is something that requires carefulness. I think any question that comes to your mind is a question worth asking. And when we build fences around certain things to try and protect them, which is what I think he was doing, was like, don't, you know, protect your belief in this Christian doctrine. Like, that's going to be really important for you to hold on to.
Right.
Then we are not giving them a chance to prove themselves in our lives. And that, if we don't give them that chance, it means we're scared to give them that chance. And so, to me, this podcast was to say, I would have really benefited from something like this.
Sure.
Like, people talking about different ways to experience God. And if God is a subjective experience, and he has to be because there's no proof of him sitting out there, what are some other subjective experiences other people have had with him? And how do different people interact with him and reach him? And so, we've interviewed a guy who grew up fundamentalist, kind of like me and you, and now finds transcendence through music. We interviewed a guy who considers Superman his religion in a metaphorical sense, I think, and a philosophy professor who talked about, he's a Quaker and he's a philosopher, but he wants to be a poet because poesy is where he...
Poesy is a word?
Yeah, poesy is a word.
Wow.
But it will say poetry here.
Okay.
But because poetry
is... For the ignorant mind.
Poetry is where he feels like he can interact with God more. And so I want to be a resource to people who are scared to ask questions or don't know what questions to ask or just want to hear another version of what they've been taught. Does that make sense? Is that
right.
Any question? Okay.
Absolutely, that does. So let's put it in our listen. The listener, your ideal listener is who?
Is a person who has grown up. I'm going to get specific here. A person who has grown up in
Lawrenceburg, Kentucky.
Who's ravishingly handsome. A guy who's grown up in probably an evangelical setting, but it doesn't have to be. It could be a fundamentalist Hindu or a fundamentalist Buddhist. I don't think you can be a fundamentalist Buddhist.
That would be fun.
Yeah. But somebody who has grown up in a tradition that they are questioning and maybe are surrounded by voices saying, maybe stop asking the questions.
Yeah.
I think that's the person. And I, you know, this whole thing has been so far pretty lightweight and pretty silly. So I don't think we're asking the deep, hard questions, but I think people need a primer. They need a way to get into this process. Sure. And I would love to be a way to help people into the process.
Right. I think that nexus of, I had this background that that hasn't prepared me for life as I see it now, and I'm asking these questions. Lots of people go through that.
Yeah.
Lots of people come out saying, well, I don't want to think about it anymore. And they either go towards either, you know, to be a skeptic or whatever. They don't try to hold both in their hands. And I think that's the unique offer that you have. You know, you said, I still think there's something out there,
yeah,
you know, and the exploration and still being part of that journey, embracing, you know, this history that you've come from and also the questions, you know, viewing it as a journey more than I know exactly, you know, what I think. I think that's your unique.
Well, that's a better description of what I'm trying to do than I offered.
So. No. Well, that I, as a listener, I think that's what you're providing.
So good. I, you know, sometimes it's easier to be on the outside looking in and describe something than trying to describe it from within. But
I think the podcast, though, naturally leads people who have questions to reach out to somebody. How can a listener contact you?
You can email me at patchdrury@gmail.com.
Okay, so this unique first name is P-A-T-C-H.
P-A-T-C-H.
And this unique last name is...
D-R-U-R-Y.
Okay.
@gmail.com.
Okay, gotcha.
I am not looking for... I have a long list of people I want to interview, so if you call me and want to talk, like we can just talk, I'm not going to be like, oh, you'd be perfect for the podcast. Let's talk about all the shit you're going through.
Right. Right.
So I'm not looking to exploit. I don't offer that to say, hey, call me. I've got all the answers,
right.
And I am perfectly willing for people to hear me say religion is about the inside life and be like, well, that's pretty dumb. Here's what it's really about. So I'm not proselytizing. I've had enough proselytizing in my life.
Awesome. Good deal. Well, I feel that I know you better.
Well, I think it's a success then.
Good deal. All right.
I'm glad you came, man. Thanks for being here.
Not a problem.
And thanks for giving me the courage to step out onto these branches.
Oh.
Both philosophically and podcastily.
Oh, good. Is that another word? Is that like poetric?
Poesy,
sorry.
Hey, okay. Yeah, if people want to listen to your podcast about Berea, how do they do that?
Simply just go to thebereapodcast.com. We've got all our information there and, you know, the catalog of our previous episodes.
Would you say your ideal listener is people who had walk-ons on 80s television shows?
Yes. I think that definitely. I'm filling a unique niche. And unfortunately, the audience is shrinking every day.
Yeah, they're all dying.
I know. So that's why we've got to hit while iron's hot.
I was just excited that somebody else remembered the power of Matthew Starr.
Oh, my gosh. He could, like, move things with his mind.
Yeah, it was great. How about Manimal? Remember Manimal?
Oh, absolutely. And right after... No. Because at the same... Was Manimal and Auto Man?
I don't remember Auto Man.
Desi Arnaz Jr.
Turned into a car?
No, he created a first automatic man. Which was a like AI that had to drain power to become physical,
So I'll have to Google that one.
Okay, no, right. There's other things to do.
I could just keep exploring, but God, it was right, or I could look up the Auto Man.
Good, that's your next. That's our next podcast.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
Auto Man fan base fan podcast. Okay, there you go. Well, right. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Thanks for coming, man.
That's it. That was our episode. So big thanks to Troy for coming and chatting with me. Check out his podcast, the Berea Podcast. You should be able to Google that and find it easily. Hopefully now you have a little sense of why this podcast exists and what it's trying to do. Maybe you have less of a sense. I don't know. Maybe we just confused you. Hopefully not. But check us out. We'll be here on the Breadbox Media site, and we'll be releasing this stuff weekly. We would love for you to come check us out again, and also don't forget to hit that support button and donate a little bit of moolah. All right,